I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. On the phone lines right now, we have Tim McConaughey. He's the founder of Izzard Inc. Publishing and the author of 10 Secrets to a Bestseller, An Author's Guide to Self-Publishing. Newsworthy to have Tim on the show this week, given all the recent news surrounding Jill Abramson, the former editor of the New York Times, her book, and the allegations of plagiarism. So, Tim, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Great, Alex. How are you doing? It's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise. Pleasure to speak with you. So, this has been probably the biggest, or one of the two or three biggest media stories over the last couple weeks. Jill Abramson, as we said a couple times, former editor of the New York Times, comes out with this big book, ironically titled Merchants of Truth, looking at the media industry as a whole. And she goes through the rise and fall and everything in between of organizations such as Vice News, BuzzFeed, The Washington Post, and some allegations of plagiarism here. Tell the folks what's going on, or what's been going on.
You know, what's really going on here is she's been, first of all, back in January, they had some folks go through and fact-check her book, and they found some irregularities with it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that happens with advanced reader copies. They go out to the media, they find a few things. There's a disclaimer saying, hey, this isn't, you know, the final book. And then it comes out that there are parts lifted. Michael Moynihan went through and found in three chapters that there were parts that weren't properly cited, is what Jill Abramson says.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. So this Vice News reporter has a series of tweets basically showing passages that Abramson more or less lifted word for word, or pretty damn close to it. And I watched her interview last Sunday with CNN, and her defense was that she referenced the quotes in the footnotes. And even though she was quoting directly, or at the very least paraphrasing, she didn't say as read in blank. She just saved that for the footnotes, and she says that covers her. What's your opinion on her defense?
Yeah, okay, so I understand. I saw that same interview, and it looked like she was a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but
certainly,
but
she certainly doesn't help her cause. She doesn't come across as a very sympathetic figure.
No, but at Izzard Inc. Publishing, what we do, and this is what I talk about in my 10 Secrets to a Bestseller book, there's a lot of steps that go. So she might have come up with a full-on manuscript that did cite everything and was there. But between when you have your final manuscript done and it goes to be designed, the interior goes to be designed, the typesetting done, things can happen. There's lots of people touching it. Things can be misplaced and there. But what authors need to do is when their book is done, they need to read the thing. They need to make sure that everything's there, everything's properly cited. There were 70 pages of footnotes. So I get the fine line that she's walking, but yeah, it's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, and my thing is too, so you're obviously, you know, have a lot of experience in this. How does stuff like this make it past the editing process?
Well, this is where I feel, Alex, the bigger problem lies with the help that major publishers give authors. Outside of education and textbook publications, there really aren't required to hire fact checkers. That's left up to the author. There's always the phrase at the beginning of the book that they put in there saying anything that's said in here, all the facts belong to the authors. Kind of gets the publishers off the hook.
Right.
What I like about this situation is the readers are holding the author and the publisher responsible for the content here. And that's what needs to happen. The overall change needs to happen where we, you know, get out of the fake news era, get more fact checkers and get that done.
And I'm glad you brought up that term fake news, because this does not reflect well. You know, obviously the New York Times, for a certain sect of our political, for our politicians and its and their followers, not held in high regard. And obviously, you know, 99% of those attacks are partisan and unfounded. But stuff like this does not help the perception.
No, not at all. You know, we might be getting more publicity, more information, more people might know the book's out there, but that's just, it's got to be tough in her situation with her background and her folks to be sitting through these kind of errors that came out in this book.
So what do you think leads somebody, and Jill Abramson, is the particular example we've been discussing, but what would lead someone as accomplished as her to do something that really, you know, is just lazy? I mean, if you're getting the source, if you're getting the material, rather, from a source, just cite it. I mean, we learned that in high school, and we're turning in research papers. Why would lead someone to just totally not do that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Alex. I think part of it might just be there was a lot going on there. You bring up the college and textbooks, or college and high school,
right,
where you're required to submit papers, and it goes through plagiarism software. I don't know how that stuff wasn't caught. We just did a book. It's coming out in September. It's called How to Save the Constitution.
Wow.
And we ran that through plagiarism software, and we found exact quotes that were used in other areas, and luckily the author owned that content. But it's fairly easy, you know, even from not spending all the money to get a plagiarism checker or fact checker, it's fairly easy to get a pretty good overview of what's going on.
Yeah, it just maybe comes down to hubris, just thinking like nobody's
going
to catch this. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
The other point I wanted to bring up, too, in regards to this, Tim, is, you know, obviously this should have been referenced in the book, so what she put out there. But also, you know, I'm always wondering how does this vice reporter find, because these were not, you know, she quoted passages from obscure readings and obscure magazine articles. How does one get, because it does, in her defense, and again, what she did is inexcusable, but she mentioned, you know, Vice had a vendetta to push back against this book, and it certainly seems like Vice did their own opposition research. I mean, this stuff, you had to really look to find it, which again, doesn't excuse it, but that's an interesting little twist to this as well, I think.
It is, and but you know these things are going to happen.
Right.
Anytime somebody of that caliber with that kind of resume is going to put out a book, such as Merchants of Truth, it's going to come back. You've got to make sure that everything is there.
Right, especially when it's very critical of other outlets like this is at times.
Yes, so that's where it's important. Really, I bet she never does this again, and I hope publishers learn from this and make better content.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing, too, that to me is even more inexcusable than just the lazy lack of citations and plagiarism is are the facts that are just wrong. She had numerous people tweeting out stuff. She misidentified the gender of a Vice News reporter. That would seem to be a very easy question you ask right at the top of the interview, right? How do I pronounce your name? How do you like to be identified, et cetera? You know, also stuff like she got personnel rooms wrong. She said Philip Bump, one of the Washington Post star political reporters, came aboard in the 2016 campaign, which is just completely wrong. He was there like a decade earlier. So to me, even beyond the plagiarism, there are basic facts that are wrong, too.
Yeah, you're right with that, Alex. And I thought I was reading a Vox.com interview, and she actually said that she had fact checkers.
What?
So I really don't know how all this got by.
Yeah, that's incredible. And how about when situations like this arise with this kind of book, you know, we hear the phrase, any publicity is good publicity. I don't think that phrase is true at all. I mean, I've lived through some things myself in my professional career that tells you that's not always true. And also, I mean, this too, like, I am a media geek, obviously. I would love to buy this book and kind of get her perspective on the landscape, especially with all the layoffs now at BuzzFeed, and I'm interested in all this stuff, but I'm not buying this book because I don't know what's wrong, what's lifted. It just doesn't seem legitimate to me anymore, despite the legitimacy of the person who's writing it. What's your take on kind of the PR storm that goes along with situations like these, good or bad for sales in the end?
I think it's going to be a little bit rough myself. I'm waiting for the second edition
before
I'll come out and I'll snag a copy. But really, this stuff, I mean, similar instances came out in 2015. This continues to happen. And they need to change the process of how this happens. It's just it's not good for Simon & Schuster. It's not good for anybody.
What is the process? You've mentioned that a couple times. What is that more specifically?
What we do is Izard Inc. Publishing is when we sit down, we have various checks. Even before it goes to press, even before we send advanced reader copies out, we make sure that our books are read again. And we go through and check the facts. We go through and run the plagiarism software just to take a look. We hire fact checkers if that's what our authors want to do. There's a lot that can be done to fix this. And bringing fact checkers in-house for major publishers is something they probably ought to look at.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing to me that there aren't so many. I mean, you even try to get a piece published in a magazine. The fact-checking process is usually intense. It's amazing that with books, it would seem you seem to suggest that it's looser.
Yeah, it depends on the publisher, but yeah, it is looser. They just put that warranty clause on there saying it's the responsibility of the author, and they run with it. I also believe she got over I think the report was about $1 million advance. So she could have covered things such as this to get fact checkers, which range anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 for a book. She could have taken her advance and invested that in there and found probably the majority of these problems.
What do you think this does to her reputation?
I think it tarnishes it. It's not good. Ultimately, I think she learns from this, and I bet it never happens again.
Yeah, I agree there. We're talking with Tim McConaughey. A couple more questions here, Tim. So you mentioned the process. Just why? Because this is not the first instance like this has happened. Why do you think publishers have been slow to bring on fact checkers and kind of expedite in this process and make it more efficient and better?
Yeah, I believe it's expense. Mm-hmm. They want to maximize it, and I think it's also readers not holding authors and publishers responsible.
What do you mean? Just still buying books even if they know they're factual errors?
Yeah, if they're factual errors, if they haven't been fact-checked, people are still buying them. They're still bestsellers. Why are we still buying them? Why aren't we holding publishers and authors accountable more?
Well, I think an interesting point to that is, too, especially in the quote-unquote nonfiction realm, is all these political books out. I mean, we know you mentioned fake news a few minutes earlier. To go back to that, there's a market for news or books or opinion that backs up your preconceived notions. So you have all these right-wing hit piece books from all the, you know, Dinesh D'Souza. I mean, let's go on down the line. These guys are bestsellers, but their books are just riddled with errors or distortions or inconsistencies, oftentimes all three. But, you know, there's a market for that. And for a certain percentage of the country, that actually is the truth, even though it isn't. So it just seems like this vicious cycle that maybe there isn't an incentive for publishers to really clamp down on this because they make so much money pushing out books that have large factual inaccuracies.
Yeah, if they're selling,
right?
Why change the business model?
Right, exactly. What would be the biggest point if a publisher or someone in high levels of a publishing company reads your book, Tim? Again, 10 Secrets to a Bestseller, an Author's Guide to Self-Publishing, or even someone looking to self-publish. What are some of the biggest takeaways you hope that they can get from your book and what we've seen here with the Abramson story?
I think that quality really matters. Over, you know, between 30 and 40% of all books published are self-published. This is a prime example that if you're going to self-publish your book and want to be credible, get your facts straight. Make sure you're not plagiarizing. Make sure everything's taken care of. Make sure it's a quality piece. Make sure what we do at Izard Inc. Publishing is we make sure that they hire the best talent in publishing to be on their team and build your team so they come back and say, hey, as an author, this is what needs to be fixed. Well, what about this? What about this?
Right. Right. Tim McConaughey, Tim, great stuff. I'm sure we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for coming on.
I appreciate it. It's been a delight.
One. It is Boston Community Affairs, Greg Dickerson. You know him, you love him. Greg, welcome to Saturday
Hey,
mornings.
How are you doing? Glad to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. Yes, this is the show we make good on all the crap that we stir up during the week. This is
so that means it's a 3-hour show.
Only half an hour, but you're right. We should expand it given all the stuff that happens here. I think that's a good idea. It's part of my goodwill tour. This show.
Very good. You'll make up for everything.
I try. In half hour intervals. I saw a few of your tweets yesterday. You are now raising money for kids who deal with Tourette's syndrome and OCD. You're joining with the Tourette's Association of America. The first question is, you've been public, obviously, about some of these issues in the past. Why now have you decided to try to raise some money?
Well, I actually started this a couple of months ago through my Facebook page and was able to raise some money. And I didn't necessarily want to go on Twitter. I didn't want to open it up to everybody. But then I said, you know what? If I'm going to do it, I might as well do it 100%. So I opened it up on Twitter. And it's a long time coming for me because, you know, as some people know, some people may not know, I've suffered from Tourette's since I was a kid, along with OCD and depression. And I've always felt and I've always wanted to try and, you know, give back, so to speak, or try and help out other people who are afflicted with it, especially kids. And just one thing or another, I just have never done it. And finally, there was a day a few months ago where I said, I got to do this. It's about time. And so I decided to start a GoFundMe page, contacted the Tourette's Association of America, where you can find them at Tourette.org, Tourette.org. And I said, I want to help kids, especially, because I know, you know, in this day and age, Alex, of bullying, we see kids and hear about kids getting bullied ad nauseum, and it hurts their life, it ruins their life, and in some cases, kids take their lives because of the bullying. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that happen. I want kids to know that they're going to be fine. That they may be different, but different isn't bad. I know as a kid, I was bullied because of what I went through, and I want kids to know that. And I want kids to know that even if they have Tourette's, they suffer from OCD, they can still live their dreams because I live my dreams. I overcame my Tourette's and was able to live my dream. I was able to live my dream with my career.
Right. You've talked about this in the past, as I mentioned, but you know, being a professional broadcaster with Tourette's, imagine not the easiest thing. Just how did that process? How did you allow yourself to still pursue what you wanted to do with Tourette's on you? It must have been tough at times.
Yeah, it was difficult. To be honest with you, Alex, I don't know how I've done it. I don't know how I did it, especially on TV. Easy to do really on radio because you don't have a camera on you, and I can make a twitch or a mouth movement or whatever or touch things. And nobody sees it. On TV, it was just mind over matter. And I know a lot of times when I was on TV, as soon as the red light went off or the camera went off me, I would do a few twitches. So I was just, for some reason, I was able to, I don't know if compartmentalize it. I don't know if that's the right word, but I was able to get into my mind, don't twitch, don't do anything, just do what you're supposed to do, speak on camera, relax your body, and do the job that you're getting paid to do. But in all honesty, how I was able to do it all those years is still kind of baffling to me because of how much I do twitch and how much I do suffer from OCD. Unfortunately, it's a every waking moment part of my life.
Wow. Yeah. Did you receive any professional coaching, or is this all just truly your mind over matter?
It was just all mind over matter. I mean, obviously, I've seen neurologists, and I've seen various psychiatrists and psychologists. I've tried various different things, medications and whatnot, non-medications, but it was just, it was simply mind over matter. And I think a lot of it too was the power of positivity. I know it sounds goofy,
yeah,
but when I was doing it and I was feeling good, I didn't twitch. Unfortunately, you know, and I lost my job at Comcast, now NBC Sports Boston. NBC Sports Boston. I lost my job because of my Tourette's and my OCD. At one point, everything caught up with me, and I wasn't able to do the job like I once was able to do it. The twitching, the OCDs, stuttering came about as part of my OCD and Tourette's, and that basically ruined my TV portion of my career. So, you know, I got a good 15 years out of it, which I'm really proud of and really happy for.
Wow. And I imagine that I would have been sent into a very dark place after that.
I was. Oh, I was in a, I mean, you know, Tourette's, OCD, ADHD, depression, they all kind of go hand in hand. And, you know, I'm sure you understand, Alex, when you have a dream, when you have a certain dream and you've had a dream since you were, you know, 6, 7 years old. I remember I told my dad at 7 years old, Dad, I want to be like Bob Lobel. My dad kind of chuckled at me, but that's what I wanted to do. And then when that dream is, you know, basically when the rug is pulled out from under you, you do go into a deep, dark place. And I'm still not over it, to be honest with you. It's been 5 years, and I still struggle with it. But, you know, it's just one of those things that you have to take day by day and hour by hour. And I just live with the notion that, you know what, I'm not going to get any better. This is not going to change. I'm going to twitch. I'm going to do these things. And I just, you know, I have to continue to live with it. But as I said before, if I can't help myself necessarily, I sure as hell can help somebody else, especially kids.
Yeah, no, definitely. But you just have to, yeah, I mean, definitely, definitely. You know, because I think to my situation, I mean, I, you know, don't have Tourette's, but I've had anxiety my whole life and have gone to therapy numerous times. Now, when you say OCD, you know, I was diagnosed with OCD as a child as well, but it was more neurotic type behavior, like can't step on cracks or I must turn off the lights a few times before I exit a room. What do you mean when you say OCD? How does that?
There's a lot of that. It's, you know, I think a lot of people, when it comes to OCD, they think about, oh, he's got to wash his hands 100 times.
Right, what I described.
Yeah, that's not me. There are my twitches are like, I'll give you an example. My mother used to laugh at me for this, but in a good way. She joked with me. I'll throw something in the trash basket, and I'll have to reach my hand in 2 or 3 times to make it feel right.
Oof. That's pretty gross.
I'll
have washed it after. And
No, I wash my hands after. Absolutely.
Yeah, you wash, and that's where the OCD could be good. Oh, I have to wash my hands now numerous times to get
right. But I don't end up washing them, you know, 47 times. I you know, when it's funny when it comes to washing hands. Anytime I touch any sort of chemical or something, if I'm cleaning up the kitchen with some chemicals, I wash my hands. It's just one of those things where I have to do it. I can't not wash my hands after I'm touching certain things. You know, I remember as a kid, I would close the slider door in our house, and it didn't feel right, so I would literally have to open and close it, open and close it, open and close it like 3 or 4 times. So it's stuff like that manifested itself. And the other thing too is with my OCD, and this is what's hard for me as a quote unquote normal human being to rationalize and to deal with. I have OCD where if I don't do something, or if I do something, I feel like something bad is going to happen. We have a table here in my house at the top of my stairs. I never ever put anything on that table. You know, I could set a drink on it or set a piece of paper on it, but I never do it because in my mind, if I do it, something bad or something negative is going to happen. So those sort of things I deal with on a daily basis.
Well, it's the same thing as to why you don't step on cracks, because you believe that something bad will happen to you if you do that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then you avoid the behavior as a result.
Right, exactly. See? Exactly. And I tried to go through behavior modification, and it was, I've done it a couple of times, and it just wasn't something that worked for me. You know, as I've said to various psychiatrists and psychologists, I know my behavior is, I don't want to say crazy, but that's probably not the right word.
Irrational. It's irrational. The OCD is inherently
irrational. Yeah, it's absolutely irrational. If I walk over and take the soda that I have right now and set it on the table, my house is not going to blow up. My wife's not going to get in a car accident. My son's not going to get hurt. I'm not going to get hurt. I know that, but I still can't do it.
That's the toughest thing, when you know you're acting irrationally, but yet you can't.
Right.
So bring it back, Greg, to this GoFundMe page. You mentioned kids and bullying, and I imagine it must be absolutely brutal for kids with Tourette's, whether it's verbal or twitching. It must be absolutely brutal out there.
Yeah, it was tough on me, and I'm sure it's tough on kids, because it's, you know, as I often say about Tourette's and OCD or any real neurological disorder, even depression as well, it's something that people can't necessarily see or grasp or understand. You know, if I say, my 10-year-old son has a heart defect, or my 10-year-old son has, was diagnosed with cancer, people understand that. They can grasp onto that. But when you say Tourette's, when you say OCD, they think about, he's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He's just twitching. People don't, even adults, don't get a firm grasp of what people go through. And I'm sure, one of the things I want to do, besides helping kids, I want to educate parents, too. I want to educate and make parents understand exactly what their kids are going through, and that it's serious, and that it's not necessarily a phase that they're going through. I think a lot of parents out there think that kids who do twitch or have OCD tendencies just think it's some sort of phase that they're going through. So to me, as much as helping kids, encouraging kids, telling kids that, listen, you may be different, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, and just because you're a little different doesn't mean you can't do something. You can do whatever you set your mind to, but I also want parents to understand as well, and I want parents to be able to grasp things as well.
And how can folks donate to this again, Greg?
They can go to my GoFundMe. If you go to GoFundMe and type in Tourette's, they'll be able to find my page. They can also go to my Facebook page, Greg Dickerson, or they can go to my Twitter page, which is at Greg Dickerson 13.
And most importantly, you said if you donate, you'll work to get Mark James fired from EEI?
That is, I promise, if I'm able to raise at least $5,000, I will make sure that Mark James never works on WEEI again. Now that, to me, forget about the kids. That, to me, is the main goal. To me, that's the reason people should donate. And if people can't donate, listen, the one thing I understand, Alex, there are so many, and I put this in my GoFundMe page, I understand there are so many great causes out there. I understand. I just hope that some people will help a little bit. If it's $5, if it's $2. And even if they can't donate, if they're able to forward it to other people, if they're able to retweet it or resend it on Facebook and have someone else see it, that would be a big help to me as well.
Absolutely. Greg Dickerson, find it on Twitter, Facebook. Greg, and what do you have the exact URL to the GoFundMe? I can find it here in a second for those who don't. But yes, it's on his Facebook page. It's on his Twitter page. He's tweeted out numerous times over the last couple days. If you just visit him there to the GoFundMe page, GoFundMe.com/help kids to deal with Tourette syndrome and OCD. Greg, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Hey, Alex, I really appreciate you doing this for me. Thanks so much, and I appreciate everybody out there taking the time to listen. Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.